Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bechoros Daf Mem Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option available on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. On the top of Daf Mem Ches Omed Aleph, you will notice a Mishnah. Before beginning the Mishnah and Gemara, let us glance at the outside margin where we feature the Nosei. The Nosei is a topic heading in our Gemara markings, Shas Ozer, the Shas, the Gemara that you see on your screen. We feature topic headings and structural notes that we entitle Mivneh when necessary. In this case, we have written on the outside margin, Nolad Shnei Zechorim Beleido Rishona. A person has a twin birth. Two males are born. Ve'echod Mehen Bechor. One of them came out first. Ve'lo Yadinon Mihu. We don't know which one of the two boys emerged first. We will discuss Ma Chiyuv Ha'av. What is the father's obligation with regard to redemption of his firstborn? And another point, im meisoav v'habonim kayomim, if the father died and the sons continue, ma dinom legabi hapidyon, what is the law regarding their obligation with regard to redemption? The Mishnah, mi shelo bochra ishto v'yolda shnei zechorim, a man whose wife had not given birth to any children yet, and now she bears two children, two male sons, no sein chamisha sloim lekoin, five sloim, the silver pieces, five silver coins are given as redemption to a kohen. Meis echod mehen besoch shloshim yom hoav potter. If one of the two boys, and as we said, we don't know which one is the actual firstborn, so one of them dies within 30 days, the father is exempt. The father can claim that the actual firstborn is the one that died, and he died before day 30. Hence, there is no obligation of redeeming. The halacha of pidyon haben applies only if a child lasts more than 30 days. Meisoav v'abonim kayomim. If the father dies and the children continue to live, these two sons that we can call sveikas, doubts, we don't know which one is the actual firstborn. Rabmeir Omer, im nosnu ad shelo cholku, if they paid their pidyon before they divide the estate, nosnu, so what they gave, they gave. In other words, each one gave five sloim, thinking that he may in fact be the firstborn. So if they gave before the division of the estate, what they gave, they gave. V'im lav, if they didn't pay, pturim, they are exempt. Reb Yehuda Omer, nischaivu nechosim. Reb Yehuda says that the obligation for redemption, now there is a definite firstborn over here, so the property that they inherited from their father carries upon it an obligation to pay the Kohen. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, in the event that what Rabbi Meir said, they would be exempt, meaning if they had not paid, so there would be exemption, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is obligation. So that between the two of them, five sela must be paid to the Kohen. Zohar Unikeva, if the birth was not to Zohorim, but rather a Zohar and a Keva, a male and female, and we don't know for sure which one exited first, Ein kan l'koyin klum. The Kohen has no claim on them because it could be that the female was born first, and hence there is no law of redemption. You'll notice to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text an arrow. This is to be aligned with the arrow that you find a few lines up, where the Mishnah spoke about a father dying, leaving the sons. Before we go ahead in the Gemara itself, we have some notes to take advantage of. We have our Nosei, Mivneh heading in the outside margin. In this case, we combine our topic heading with structural note. You'll notice a Roman numeral 1 and 2 are featured. In our Gemara itself, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll notice a Roman numeral number 1 and an indication that Roman numeral number 2 will be found on Amud Beis, so that if you turn or scroll ahead to Amud Beis, you'll notice in the lower part of the narrow lines of the Gemara text, there is a Roman numeral number 2 opposite a line in Gemara where you see a squiggle underlined which says Ve'iko demasni lei asefa, where the Gemara's discussion and clarification will be focused on the latter part of the Mishnah. So that's what we have featured here under our Nosei Mivneh heading, Shnei Lashonos, the 1 and 2 represent two versions, Ahecho Koi HaDiyun, regarding which section of the Mishnah is the discussion focused. Roman numeral 1 focuses it Resha, on the earlier part, and number 2 focuses it Asefa Adivrei Rebbe Yehudon, on the comment that Rebbe Yehuda makes in the Mishnah. In addition, as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you will notice a series of double underlines. They are Shlavim Levarer HaSheela. They are stages in trying to figure out or clarify the issue or the question of Demiso Av Emas. When did the father die? The Mishnah made mention of the father dying, leaving his sons. Was it Toch Shloshim, before they reached 30 days of age, or Ola'achar Shloshim, or after they reached 30 days of age? So now, after laying out a little bit of the structure of the Gemara, you'll notice that most of this Omid of Gemara is focused on trying to clarify this issue of when did the father die. The Mishnah had mentioned that if the father died, so Rabbi Meir says if they paid the money, so what they paid, they paid. If they did not pay money, so then they are exempt. So now our Gemara. Demis ho'av emas. When did the father die? At what point in the, as far as the age of his sons, of his infant sons, did he die? Ilei mo demis la'achar shloishim yoim, that the father died after they reached 30 days of age. Well, beho Omar Rebbe Meir. Would Rebbe Meir say concerning this, ki choku peturin, that if they divided the estate, they would be exempt. V'ho ishtabdu luhu nichsi. The property is bound. After all, you have our Mishnah mentioned that if there was no division, the Mishnah said if there was, under Rebbe Meir's name, if there was no division, and they had not paid, they would be exempt. So if we take a look at the Rashi, Ha ishtabid nichsi, the chov ma'al yahu, this is a full-fledged debt. So how could it be that if the brothers had divided the estate, there would be exemption? Continuing in the Gemara, Elo demis besoch shloshim yom. It must be then that the father had died before they reached 30 days of age. Well, my shno ki holku. Why is it then that if they divided their estate, that Rebbe Meir says there is exemption? De'ozel legabi hai umad chilei. If the Kohen approaches one of the two boys, he will say, well, I'm not the firstborn, go to the other one. If the Kohen goes to the other one, so he too will push him off and say, go to the first one. Well then, ki lo cholku nami, even if they did not divide the estate, lezel legabi hai velidche, velezel legabi hai velidche, even in the event that they did not divide the estate, there should be exemption, because each one should be able to push off the Kohen, saying, I'm not the firstborn. Yet, Rabbi Meir seems to make a distinction between a case of their not having divided versus their having divided. Omar Rabbi Yirmiya, Zois Oimeris. From this we see, namely, in the case that they had not divided, Rabbi Meir indicates that there is obligation. So this shows us, Shnei Yosef ben Shimon Shoyu Birachas, two people with the same name that lived in the same city, V'lokhu Sode B'Shutfis, and they bought a field together in partnership. Baal Choyv Goyve Oiso Mehem. If one of them owes money to one of these Yosef ben Shimon's, owes money to a creditor, he will be able to collect. You have a Toveya, a Malva, let's say, that has a document indicating that Yosef ben Shimon owes him money. What's not clear is which one owes him money. And now you have two Yosef ben Shimon's that own a field in partnership, jointly. The Omar Lei, the Toveya, the person holding the shtar, the document indicating that he has a debt to collect, he can say to either one of them, Ibididoch Masikno, if you are the one that is the actual one that owes me money, Monsa Didoch Kosha Kilno, I'm coming to collect your portion of the field that is due to me to pay off the debt. V'i b'chavroch masikno, and if it's the other one that owes me money, so monso d'chavroch ko shakilno, I am coming and taking from the field the portion that he owes me in the debt. So too, in our case, if you're dealing with an estate that has not been divided, the Kohen comes and collects his five sloyim from this estate, saying, if you are the firstborn, so I'm collecting the five sela from your portion of the estate. And if your brother is the firstborn, so I'm collecting my five sloyim from his portion of the estate. At this point, then, we have an interim explanation for Rebbe Meir. Namely, the father himself died within 30 days. Had they not divided the field, the Kohen can collect from the field the five sloim that is owed to him. The Gemara continues. Omar Rava. Rava introduces a question. It lasts a few lines. You can see we have a long question marking to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Rava says, Michdi, let us look into this issue. Nichse debar inish inun arvin bay. The property of a person serves as a guarantor for the individual. Mi iko midi, is there anything or any situation that as far as the debtor is concerned, the one who owes the money, you couldn't collect from him? In our case, the Kohen couldn't approach any one of these two claiming that they owe him money, because each one is a sofek. Each one can say, I'm not the Bechor. And yet, ula orev motzi tova lei. And yet you're saying that the Kohen can go to the property that has not yet been divided and lay stake to 5 sela worth of property. V'hotnan, do we not have the following teaching? Hamalvis chaveru ayudei orev, someone who extended a loan to a lova, to a debtor, with the intervention of a guarantor, lo yifra min ha'orev, the malve, the loan, the lender cannot collect from the guarantor, v'kayim alon de lo yitba min ha'orev tchila. And what this really means is that you can't go initially to the orev. You can go to the orev only if the lova doesn't have with what to pay. But if you can't get past the lova stage, the borrower stage, each borrower claiming that he doesn't owe any money, you can't then go to the guarantor. So likewise, in our case, if you have a father that died, leaving 2 sons, and an estate that hasn't been divided yet, how in the world can the Kohen collect from the estate, as Rabbi Meir indicates that if they hadn't divided the estate, the Kohen can collect from it, when the Kohen can't go to the children, to the Bechor himself, because each one is a Sofek. And the rule we just learned says that if you can't collect from the borrower, because he can push you off, because he has a strong claim against the lender, so how can the lender collect from the guarantor? And in our case, the property serves as the guarantor. Elo Omar Rova, le'oilom shemeis le'achar shloishim yoim. The case featured in our Mishnah that Rabbi Meir was addressing is a father that died after the children reached 30 days of age. Now this, by the way, was the first attempt we had in the Gemara, where you notice the first double underline. If we're dealing with an estate that had a lot of resources, a lot of value to it, so the Kohen would be able to collect even after they divided. As we saw earlier, the property at the point that the father was alive and they reached age 30 days, at that point the father's property became bound to pay off that debt. And it wouldn't matter if they subsequently divided. The original debt remains on that property. So why does Rabbi Meir describe a case of exemption? V'hocha b'mayaskinon, what is the case here where, once again, the father died after day 30? You know what we're talking about. The entire value of this man's property is the same amount of money that would be due to the Kohen, 5 sela. And now the Gemara goes on to lay down several basic points of acceptance before we can get into the machlokas. In other words, there are certain assumptions that are made, 3 assumptions, and we have listed them off by numbering them 1, 2, and 3, and also a dashed underline under the expression of the kule alma. So if you scan ahead, you can see there are 3 assumptions that we are laying down before we start to analyze the point of controversy. Ude kule alma. Islahu de Rab Asi. First of all, we mentioned that we're talking about an estate that is worth a total of 5 sloyim. And everyone holds from Rav Asi. What's Rav Asi's principle? Jom Rav Asi, Achen Shecholku. When brothers divide an estate, Mechza Yorshin Umechza Lekuchos. Half of what each one receives, in other words, the portion that each heir receives, is viewed as partial inheritance and partial purchase. Rashi mentions very briefly that there exists a doubt in how to look at brothers that divide an estate. Do we say that the portion that a brother receives in an estate that he inherits from his father retroactively, the portion that he receives was that portion that he was destined to receive from the beginning? That's called Brera. And if you say Brera, that what you receive we view retroactively is that which you were supposed to get from the beginning of time, so that would label it as a Yerusha, as an inheritance. If, however, you say that we don't accept this principle of Brera, that we don't look at things that at the portion that you received as retroactively designed to be yours from the very outset, so then we would view them as purchasers, lekuchos. Now, as purchasers, so the property is viewed as coming into their hands from the point that they divide onwards, and that which took place earlier, all kinds of debts that took place earlier, have no effect on the property that they are considered as if they are purchasers on it. So when we speak about old debts, if you say Brera, that retroactively this is the portion they were to receive from the very outset, so the debt is carried on the property. If you, however, say that they are viewed as purchasers, so previously assumed debts, and in this case we're talking about the Pidyon HaBen obligation, that would not be binding. It wouldn't take hold on that which they are receiving now as lekuchos. So the first assumption that we are making when we describe this case of a father having died after they reached 30 days of age, which would ostensibly create a debt, and we're talking about a property that that's worth only 5 sela and no more. As we mentioned, the first assumption is accepting Rav Asi, that brothers, when they divide an estate, it's viewed as mechtso yorshin and mechtso lekuchos. Udekuliyama, a second assumption, milva ksuva b'tora, Torah-based debts. Example of that would be the debt a person has to redeem himself or his son, Chamesh Sloim of Pidyon HaBen. That's called a milveh haksuva b'torah. Lav kiksuva b'shtar damya. It doesn't have the same strength as a financial debt that one incurs through taking a loan that is written in a document. Rather, a milveh haksuva b'torah, the debt one owes as a result of Pidyon HaBen, is called a milveh al peh, not a milva b'shtar. What's the difference between a written debt and an oral debt? So we'll touch on that as we go on in the Gemara. Udekuli Alma, a third assumption, is that everyone holds is lehu de Rav Papa, that they accept Rav Papa. The Omar Rav Papa, milva al peh, an oral loan, and that's what we are describing now as far as the 5 sloim of Pidyon HaBen. Goyve min ha-yorshin v'eino goyve min ha-lekuchos. An oral loan has a right to collect from the heirs. If a father died having left a debt, meaning owed money, but was never written down, so those that are his heirs have to pay off the debt of their father. The eino gove min alekuchos means that if a person had borrowed money and incurred a debt thereby, and after that he sold property to outsiders, to purchasers, the malve, the lender, would not be able to go to the lekuchos and say that he has a previous debt. He wouldn't be able to collect from those purchasers. Or in simpler terms, a milva apeh does not establish a lien on property. What we mean by that is a lien that that is established will carry over to those that purchase that property. So we made three assumptions. The first one is that heirs who divide an estate are called mechza yorshin mechza lekuchos. A second assumption is everyone holds from Rav Popa that a milva al peh collects only from yorshim and not from lekuchos, from heirs and not from those that we categorize as purchasers. We actually just skipped one of our assumptions, and the second of the three assumptions was that a milve haksuva b'torah is not kiksuva b'shtar; it has the strength of a milve al peh. And the third assumption is that everyone agrees with Rav Papa that a milve al peh collects only from Yerusha and not from Lekuchos. And we are now dealing with an estate that is worth only a total of 5 selah. The Hacha, and here, namely the Machlokas between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda, who seemed to argue about a case where an estate was divided, Rebbe Meir claiming that the Kohen could not collect from that estate, Rebbe Yehuda saying that he can collect from the estate. The Gemara says, and you'll notice this house marking on the outside margin is featured under our Mivneh heading, Nisyonis Lahazbir Bameh Cholkim Rimimeir Verbiuda Bamasisin. These are attempts on the Gemara's part to explain what are they arguing about. So it goes as follows. Bechomesh velo bechatzi chomesh komifliki. There's a posuk in Bamidbar, Posperik Yudches Posuk Tezayin, that we've included on the side of the Gemara. And we've written, the posuk reads, Ufduyov miben chodesh tivdeh, be'erkecha kesef chamesh shkolim b'shekela chodesh esrim geirahu. The child is to be redeemed from age 30 days onwards. And it's be'erkecha kesef chamesh shkolim. In the posuk, the word chamesh appears, five shkolim or five sloyim. When the Torah says five are to be paid. What is meant by the five? So the issue is, does five include even half that amount as well? Or is it viewed as all or nothing? The Rabbi Meir Sovar, Chomesh Velo Chatzi Chomesh. Rabbi Meir says it's an all or nothing type deal. That either the Kohen gets his five sloim, or he doesn't get even a partial amount. Now, since we're dealing with an estate that's worth a total of 5 selah, and based on our assumptions above, yorshim are considered mechza yorshim mechza lekuchos, and that a milval peh, which we are dealing with, cannot collect from the kuchos, so the maximum amount that the Kohen would be able to get over here would be 2.5 selah. Because what's available to the Kohen? Not all 5 sloyim of estate, because half of the estate is viewed as lekuchos. In their dividing the estate, the brothers are viewed as purchasers, possibly. So since we don't know, since we have a suffix about that, we say, well, half the estate is viewed as being in the hands of purchasers when we're dealing with these survivors, these heirs. But half of it is considered a purchase. And as a result of that, since Pidyon HaBen is called a milva al peh, and we saw that a milva al peh has a right to collect only from heirs and not from purchasers, how much would be available in our case? Only 2.5 selah. So Rabbi Meir, who spoke about exemption, he mentions 5 and not half of 5. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, Sovar, Chomesh v'afilu chatzi chomesh. Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, who spoke about there remains an obligation, is because even if only part of the 5, even half of the 5 is available, so be it. It must be paid. Not, like Rabbi Meir said, all or nothing. At this point, we have a question. We call this a long question. You can see there's a kuf that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line, which lasts a number of lines. We're going to develop a question. E hachi. If so, that we're talking about a father that died after day 30. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, this is a quote from the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nischaivu Nechosim, Chayov Gavra Miboyalei. Rabbi Yehuda's comment in the Mishnah was that the Nechosim become duty bound. Well, if you're talking about a case of the father having died after 30 days, why do you focus on the Nechosim being duty bound to pay off the debt? The man was bound. The Gavra, the father, was bound. The Oid Tanya, and furthermore, there's a Brisa that will add to our question. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ho'achin Shechalku, two brothers that are Sofek Bechoros, they divided an estate. Im Yesh Asora Zuz Loze, the Asora Zuz Loze, Chayovin. The Im Lav Turin. If each one has 2.5 Sela, Asora Zuz equals 2.5 Sela. So if each one has 2.5 Sela, there will be an obligation to take care, to pay the redemption. And if not, exemption. My Asora Zuz Loze, the Asora Zuz Loze. Is meant, what's contained within that 10 zuz per person? Once again, the 10 zuz is 2.5 sela. Ilemo bein dirusha bein de lukuchos. If the 10 zuz is a represents the part that's viewed as inheritance and the part that's viewed as a purchase, and Rabbi Yehuda says that if that's what they have, they're chayovin, how much is the kohen going to get? Well, according to all our assumptions above, each brother who received 2.5 sela, the kohen will only be able to take from that half that amount. Oh, and if you'll say that the kohen is able to take, almo chomesh v'afilu chatzi chomesh, then we see that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, like we said above, the 5 means even part of 5. Well, if all of this is true, ihachi mai irya asora. If a kohen is entitled to receive even part of 5 sela, so why does the source feature a very specific example of each one receiving 2.5 sela? Afilu botsir me asora nami. Even if each one received less than the ten zuz that we saw above, each group of 10 zuz is 2.5 sela. Even if they would receive less than that, we could still fulfill this idea of chomesh v'afilu chatzi chomesh. The term chatzi chomesh, the Rashi points out, is lav dafka. It doesn't mean literally half. But yet the source set up the numbers in a very specific fashion, where each one received 2.5 sela. But if our explanation of Rabbi Yehuda is correct, that will tell us chomesh afilu chatzi chomesh, then the source didn't have to give these numbers as the example. It could have given even smaller numbers of a money that each one received. Elo pshita asora zuz dirusha loze, v'asora zuz dirusha loze. Rather, you have to say that the Asora Zuz referred to in the source was not an Asora Zuz of both Yerusha and Lekuchos, but it was an Asora Zuz of Yerusha alone. Being that that's the case, each group of Asora Zuz, we said, was 2.5 Sela. And it's 2.5 Sela of Yerusha. That means they actually, the estate was worth more than 5 sloim. It was worth whatever, much more. And the numbers reflect only the amount that's accounted for by an inheritance status. So if you take the 2.5 and 2.5, you get 5. And when we speak about the amount of estate that's labeled as inheritance, the Kohen has a right to it. So you see that as we go on in the Gemara, oh, maybe we'll reread the line we just finished, was Alma Chomesh Velo Chatzi Chomesh Svira Lei. So it comes out that Reb Yehuda holds that when the Torah says the Kohen is entitled to five, it's five and not part of five. This is, if you just compare with the using the arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, align it with the arrow above, you can see that here we're saying Chomesh v'lo chatzi chomesh, whereas above we explained Reb Yehuda is holding afilu chatzi chomesh. Ella, the Gemara goes on, dekule almo chomesh v'lo chatzi chomesh. Everyone will agree, Rebbe Meir and Reb Yehuda will agree, that when the Kohen comes to collect, it's an all or nothing deal. Either he's going to get five, and if they don't have five available, he doesn't get part of that amount. Well, if everyone agrees with that, namely Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda, what are they arguing about? After all, we saw in the Mishnah an indication that if the estate is divided, then Rebbe Meir suggests exemption, and only Rebbe Yehuda says there's obligation. The Hocha b'de Rav Asi v'Rav Popo komifliki. Rashi elaborates on this, and we will learn the Rashi together. You'll see Rashi in the, about halfway down the narrow lines, v'hocha b'masnisin b'derav asi oi b'derav popo pligi. The machlokis between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda will focus on the opinions of either Rav Asi or Rav Popo, and from the ensuing analysis we'll see the point of controversy. The Rabbi Meir, Rashi goes on, is lay the Rav Asi v'Rav Papa. Rabbi Meir subscribes, now Rabbi Meir represented the opinion that we can call exemption. Rabbi Meir had indicated in the Mishnah that if they had divided the estate, these two Safek Bechoros would not be obligated to pay. Rabbi Meir accepts Rav Asi and Rav Papa. Rav Asi spoke about those that inherit are viewed as Chatzi Yorshim and Chatzi Lekuchos. Rav Popo spoke about a Milval Peh collects only from Yerusha and not from purchasers. So Rabbi Meir holds from Rav Asi and Rav Popo, Hoyul Debein Hakuyul Ein Shom Elochomesh. Since in our scenario, we have an estate that's worth a total of five, and that total means the total of five includes the mechza yorshim mechza lekuchos lo shokil midi. Therefore, Rabbi Meir says the kohen won't be able to get anything. The chomesh v'lo chatzi chomesh, because as we just said over here, everyone agrees. Chomesh v'lo chatzi chomesh. And if you accept Rav Asi and Rav Papa, since you're dealing with an estate that's worth only chomesh, the Kohen would be entitled to no more than chatzi chomesh, and that is not paid. Rabbi Yehuda, now Rashi presents how Rabbi Yehuda, how we can explain Rabbi Yehuda that says that that there is obligation. E is lay the Rav Asi. If Rabbi Yehuda holds from Rav Asi, the palgahavi lekuchos, that half of an inheritance is viewed as purchasers, the less lay the Rav Papa, and does not hold from Rav Papa. Elosfiro lay, but Rabbi Yehuda would hold the milva alpe goive min halekuchos, that an oral loan can collect from purchasers as well. Okay, v'shokil kulhu. Since lekuchos are also obligated to pay off the debt, so the part that is considered inheritance and the part that's considered lekuchos, which in effect is everything, so they will be obligated to pay. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says that there is still obligation. Inami, switching things around, is lay derav papa, v'les lay derav asi. Rabbi Yehuda holds from Rav Papa, who says that a milveh alpeh collects only from Yorshim. However, he doesn't hold from Rav Asi. Ela kulhu havu havi Yerusha. That which heirs inherit is considered complete Yerusha, not partial Yerusha. And as a result of it being considered complete Yerusha, v'shokil kula, the Kohen will be able to collect his full 5 sloyim. So that if you say that that Rav Yehuda holds from Rav Papa, that says a milva alpeh cannot collect from Lekuchos, however, he at the same time will not hold from Rav Asi, and therefore it's considered all Yerusha. So it's only Yerusha, so even though it's a milva alpeh, he's not restricted in his collection, because these are complete Yorshim and not Lekuchos. The hashta the hochi svirole, and now that we hold like this, mukminon lo lebraisa im yesh sham asora zuz loze vasora zuz loze bein hakol, if there is a total of 5 sloim, chayovin loseis kol hanechosim, then the kohen will collect from all of that estate. The imlav, namely, and if not, the bein hakol leko chomesh, that if the sum total is less than 5, pturin, the Kohen will not be able to collect, they will be exempt, the chomesh velo chatzi chomesh, because of our approach that the Torah says 5 sloyim are paid to a Kohen and not partial 5 sloyim. We now turn back to the Gemara. After having presented the case of, or the circumstances under which Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are cholek, we set it up where the father had died after the children reached 30 days of age, and we said we're dealing with an estate that's worth a total of 5 sloyim, and we concluded our analysis, the Roman numeral 1 analysis, as saying everyone will agree chomesh velo chatzi chomesh, and we therefore narrowed the point of controversy between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda on how much do they accept by way of the halachas of Rav Asi and Rav Papa. Rabbi Meir, who spoke about exemption, is because Rabbi Meir holds by both Rav Asi and Rav Papa. And Rabbi Yehuda spoke about obligation is because he may hold only by one of them, but he certainly doesn't hold by both Rav Asi and Rav Papa. Continuing in the Gemara, now we see the second lashon, the ego demasni le asefa. There are those that teach this analysis by using the jump as the jumping off point or the start of the analysis, the Seifa of the Mishnah, and here we are quoting Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nischaivu Hanechosim. Rabbi Yehuda spoke about the obligation to pay the Pidyon HaBen because the property carries the debt. The property is bound to pay off the debt to the Kohen. Demis Ho'avemas. You'll notice the same type analysis. When did the father die? If we are to assume he died after the children reached 30 days of age, Michlal, the Rabbi Meir Sovar, we would then infer that Rabbi Meir would hold Ki Cholku Pturin. That, as we saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir said that if they had not divided and paid, so then the payment is kept by the Kohen. However, if they did not pay until the estate was divided, so there is exemption. So are you going to say that if our Mishnah is set up with a father dying after 30 days of children age, that there is exemption? Ha ishtabdi nichsi. But at the point that the children reached 30 days of age, the father's property becomes bound to this debt. How can Rebbe Meir speak about any exemption? Elo besoich shloshim. The father died within 30 days of age, 30 days of children's age. Well then, ki chalku, if they divided the estate, then amai mechayev Rebbe Yehuda. Why does Rebbe Yehuda say that the children are, that there is an obligation to pay the Kohen? Leza legabi haylitche. Let the Kohen, if the Kohen goes to one of them, he can push the son can push off the Kohen, say, I'm not the Bechor. The Gabi hay velitche. And if he goes to the other one, he too pushes off the Kohen, claiming, I'm not the Bechor. So if that's the case, we said in order to appreciate an exemption, so we have to set up the Mishnah where the father died within 30 days. Well, if that be the case, then so what, they divided up the estate. At the point that they divide up the estate, and the Kohen then approaches each one of them, each one should be able to push off the Kohen. Omar Rabbi Yirmiya, Zois Oimeres. From the fact that Rabbi Yehuda speaks about an obligation, we learn Shnei Yosef ben Shimon Shoyubir Echas, two people with the same name that live in the same town. The Lokach Echod Mehem Soda Mechavero. Just notice that in this second Lashon, the case here is different. In the first Lashon, the Gemara presented this as the two Yosef ben Shimon having purchased a land b'shutfis. Here we have only one of the two Yosef ben Shimons having purchased a piece of land. That's the Lokach Echod Mehem Soda Mechavero. Baal Choiv Goive Mimenu. We see from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says that even after they divided the estate, in the case that the father had died before they reached 30 days of age, the Rabbi Yehuda's shita is that the Kohen still can demand payment. It must be then this case of the two Yosef and Shimon, where one bought a field from the other, Baal Choiv Goive Mimenu, where Yosef ben Shimon had become indebted to a lender prior to this field transaction. The Baal Chov, who had this early debt against Yosef ben Shimon, against one of them, can come and collect his debt. The Omar Lei, the Toveya says, I bididoch masikna, if you are the one that actually owes me the money, Monso didoch koshakilno. So I am taking from this field that you just bought, I am collecting your portion, the portion that you owe me. V'i b'chavroch masikna, and if the other Yosef ben Shimon, the one who sold you the field, is the one that really owes me the money, mishtabdo li mekami didoch. He became indebted to me before he sold the field to you. So that we see here, from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says that there is an obligation, namely, even after they divided the field, there is an obligation. That's because the Kohen has a previous claim on the property. And neither one can push off the Kohen. Just like And from that halacha, sort of Yirmiyah derived this point that the two Yosef ben Shimons, one having sold property to the other, cannot push off a creditor that had extended a loan to one of the two prior to this land transaction. Omar Rava Michti. Nichsui debar inish inun arvin bay. A person's property serves as a guarantor for a person's debts. And at this point, the Gemara takes a very an abbreviated approach and says, "V'kula kalishna kama." That means that from this point in the Gemara, we have circled Rava. You would basically go back to Amud Aleph, where you notice Rava's name is circled, and just approach this Gemara with all of that which was on Amud Aleph, all of the continuation of the Gemara, whereby Rava raised the question, like, I don't understand this whole issue of how can a Kohen lay claim on property when if the Kohen had approached each son, each boy himself, each one would say, I'm not the Kohen, and be able to push off the Kohen. How can the Kohen then lay claim on the property, which is no stronger than the Sfeikas, the boys themselves? And in order to come to a conclusion as to what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are arguing about, so you would just follow the Gemara that we saw earlier from that point onwards. As we continue in the Gemara, the new Mishnah, we notice a series of diamonds. On the outside margin under our Nosei Mivneh heading, we have a diamond featured. Sidra shel dugmois, a series of examples, shel sofek chiyuv chamesh sloim, where there's a doubt regarding the need to pay the five sloim, shel pidyon haben, the five sloim of firstborn redemption. Akev, as a result of taruves vlodos, we'll see a mix-up of children, where we'll see two women bearing children in a cave, we'll say, and the children, it's not clear which child is associated with which woman, and as a result of that, an element of doubt arises in the cases that will be learned now. The Mishnah, Shtei Noshim Shelo Bichru, two women who are the wives of one man that neither one of these women had given birth before, v'yoldu shnei zecharim, and they both have male children, nosein es asor sloim lekohen. This particular point doesn't really carry with it much by way of novelty. There are two wives of one man. He has now two firstborns that are obligated to be redeemed, so he pays 10 sloim to the kohen. 10 is 2 times 5. Meis echod mehen besoch shloshim yoin. If one of the two sons dies within 30 days, im lekoin echod nosan, if he paid the 10 sloyim to one kohen, so then yachsu lo chomesh sloyim. Since the obligation for pidyon haben arises only after the child reaches 30 days of age, and the kohen having received 10 sloim, which covers both of them, and one of them died within 30 days, so the kohen has to refund 5 sloim. V'im l'shnei kohenim nosan, if the father paid the 10 sloim to 2 kohanim, meaning 5 to one and 5 to the other, then eino yochol lehotzi miyodam, the father cannot claim any rebate from either one, because each kohen will say, well, the money I received was for the child that remained alive. Zohar unekeva, oi shnei zohar unekeva, the two women featured at the under our first diamond bore not two males, but rather male and female, or shnei zecharim unikeva, meaning two males and a female. And we don't know how the breakdown is because of a confusion. So, no saying chomesh shloim the kohen. The kohen has a claim of only five selah, and the father pays only five selah. Because even in the case of the two zecharim and a keva, it could be that one woman, she bore the two males, and the other woman bore the female. And in that case, there's only one real firstborn. It's true that in that case, the two males may have been birthed by the two women, and the nekeva having coming out second, but that's a doubt. And since you're dealing with an element of doubt, it's hamotzi mechavera olav araya, the kohen would have to bring proof that the two males were themselves firstborns, but in the absence of any proof like that, so the father pays only five selah, because in that case there is a one definite firstborn male child. Shtei nekevos v'zohar, o shnei zecharim u'shtei nekevos. This is another case. Those two women bore either two females and a male, or two males and two females. In other words, each woman had a twin birth, a total of four children, two males, two females. Ein kan l'kohen klum, because in these last two cases, it may very well be that the females were the first births of each woman. Another scenario. Achas bichra v'achas lo bichra. There are two women, two wives of one man. One of the women was bichra. She already had children. The other woman had no children prior to this birth. V'yoldu shnei zecharim. The two wives produce two male sons. How many of these are definite firstborns? Only one, because the other lady had children previously. So no sin chomesh shloim the kohen. Five selah are paid to the kohen. Meis echod mehen besoch shloshim yoim. If one of these two children died within 30 days, ho'av poter, the father is exempt, because the one of two that died, and as we mentioned earlier, there is a mix-up, so we don't know which one it is that died. In other words, the one that died, we don't know if he is from the lady that bore the firstborn or not. So the father is exempt, because it could be that the firstborn, the one that was a bechor, is the one that died. Mei so'av abonim kayomim. If the father died and these sons remained, Rabbi Meir Omer, im nosnu ad shelo holku, if money was paid before the division of the estate, nosnu, so what they paid is paid. Vim lav, if no payment was made until the estate was divided, pturin, so they are exempt. Each one being able to push off the kohen, each one claiming, I am not a firstborn. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, nischaivu nechosim. Rabbi Yehuda says that at the point that they were born, the property owned by that father became indebted to pay the pidyon haben, and there is a definite firstborn that remains. Zohar unikeva, these two women that were featured in our most recent diamond bore a male and female, and what we don't know is we don't know which gender came from which lady. Ein kan l'kohen klum, because it could be that the zohar, the male, was born from the woman that already had children, so there's no firstborn. Up till now, we've been dealing with two wives of one man. Now, we have shtei noshim shel shnei anoshim shelo bichru. These are two wives of two men. neither one of the women having had children prior to this. The Yoldu Shnei Zechorim. And the two wives of these two men bear two male children, their firstborns. Zenoisin Chomesh Shloim Lekoin, Zenoisin Chomesh Shloim Lekoin. Each one has to pay 5 sela to a coin. Meis Echod Mehen Besoch Shloshim Yom. If one of these two children died within 30 days, and these two fathers had paid in the meantime the 5 sela had paid out the money. So im lekoin echod nosnu, if the two fathers gave their 5 sela each one to one kohen, so now this one kohen received a payment for two redemptions, but one of them is not ought not to have been paid because the kid died within 30 days. Yachsir lohem chomesh shloim. So the kohen puts in front of these two fathers 5 shloim, and they have to work things out. Im l'shnei kohanim nosnu, if the two fathers had paid their 5 shloim to two kohanim respectively, einon yichol mehosim yodam. So neither father can ask for a refund because the kohen will claim your son is the one that remained alive. Zohar unikeva. If we have these two wives that gave birth to children, one a male and one a female, and as we've been saying up till now, there is confusion in the sense we don't know which lady produced which child. So avos pturin, the fathers are exempt. V'haben chayav livdoses atzmo, the son, he has to take care of his own redemption. Once again, we don't know who the father of the son is as a result of the confusion, but the son himself knows that he is a firstborn. So the father, each father will say, well, my wife bore the female. The son, on the other hand, knows that he has an obligation. Shtei nekevos v'zochor, the two women in our scenario produce 2 females and a male. Oi, shtei nekevos v'shnei zochorim, or they produced 4 children, 2 female, 2 male. Ein kan l'koyin klum, the kohen has no claim against either one of these fathers. Achas bichro v'achas shelo bichro shel shnei anoshim. 2 wives of 2 men. One of the women had already had children in the past. V'yoldu shnei zechorim, and they bore 2 children, 2 male children. Ze shelo bichro ishtoi nosen chomesh shloim l'koyin. There are 2 males here. So the husband of the woman that had no children beforehand, so he knows that his wife bore a male child, and it's her first male child, so he's obligated to pay 5 sela. Zohar unikeva, if these 2 women of the 2 men produced a male and female, and once again, we don't know which woman produced which child. Ein kan l'koin klum, the kohen has no claim because each father will say, my wife is the one that bore the female. The Gemara, my shno shnei kohanim, what is different about the case of money having been paid to 2 kohanim? The ozil legabi hai umadchilei. If we glance back at the Mishnah, you'll notice in the case that money was paid to 2 Kohanim in the event that one of the children had died, each Kohen pushes off the father who's claiming a refund. So, that's true, we saw in the case of 2 Kohanim, each Kohen pushes off the father. Kohen Echod Nami. Let us say we have the case of the two fathers, and they paid one Kohen. When each father comes claiming his refund from the Kohen, Lezo Legabe Hai Velitre, when the Kohen is approached by one father, let him push him off and say, listen, your son remains alive, therefore I'm not paying you money. Velezo Legabe Hai Velitre. Likewise, with regard to the other father, the Kohen can say the same thing. So why does the Mishnah say that in the case of two fathers, if they paid to two Kohanim, it's in that case that each Kohen does not have to offer any refund, doesn't have to give any refund. Leaving us to think that had the two fathers paid one Kohen, then the Kohen would be obligated to pay a refund in the case, of course, where one of those children had died before 30 days. Omar Shmuel. So Shmuel explains the difference between the case of one Kohen versus the case of having the money having been paid to the two Kohanim. Because in the case that the two fathers had paid each one five sela to one Kohen, Omar Shmuel bebo bahar sho'o, they are coming with power of attorney, which means the two fathers wrote giving power of attorney to the other one, so that when one of the fathers would come to the Kohen with his power of attorney, he would say to the Kohen, listen, you know that you received money for two Pinyon HaBens. If my son is the one that died, then you owe me the money. And if it's the other father's son that died, well, I'm coming to collect on his behalf. And that's why, in the case of money paid to one Kohen, there will be a refund. The Mishnah featured a case where no refund will be made in the case that one of the two children died before 30 days. In that case, that's dealing with the situation where the money was paid to two separate Kohanim. But just to review, we're a little bit repetitive, but in the case that the money was paid to one Kohen, the power of attorney that the fathers wrote to one another enables five of the ten Sloim to be refunded. The Gemara asks, for Amri Nardoi, Lo, we're at the top of Mem Tes Omer Aleph. Has not Nardoi said, Lo Kasvinon Adrachto Ametatali? Adrachto is a harsho, that this power of attorney, there's another girsa that says Urkisa, as opposed to Adrachto, but for our purposes, it's a reference to this power of attorney, is not written when the claim is over portables. And we're dealing here with a claim of cash. So according to the rules of writing harshah is not written when there's a claim of portables. Rashi explains a little bit further on this. Adrachto, on the third line from the top. Harshah is the more common expression, or the Hebrew expression of power of attorney, amitautli. We don't write it on portables. The hoyel v'einon b'ein, since they are not extant. In other words, it's not like land, which is just lying there. It's clear that there's a piece of land upon which a claim is being laid. But with portables, they're not there. So, merci kishikra. When you write a document indicating that something is owed to me, either it's owed to me or it's owed to someone else, and the item is not around, it looks like a lie. Shema ein biyodo mishel zeh klum. Maybe the one from whom things are being claimed doesn't have it at all. V'chasimi sadi ashikron. You have witnesses that are signing this document on a situation, on a scenario that isn't even true. So Nardoi says, as a result of this hashash, this doubt that maybe the whole thing is a lie, in other words, when they're coming to lay claim on some portables, maybe the portables aren't there in the first place and were never owed in the first place. So how can you have a document prepared with witnesses signing something that might not be true at all? So the Gemara says, that's all correct. Hani mili, when is it that we don't write a harsha over portables? Hecha de kafre, that's where the one who carries the debt, the borrower, if you will, denies owing the money. He denies having ever received a loan. Aval hecha de lo kafre, however, where there is no denial taking place, kasfinon. Now, in our case, where the two fathers paid the Kohen isn't denying that he received five selah from each father. Being that that's the case, so since there's no denial, you can write a harsha in such a case and not worry. There is no appearance of a lie. Zohar unekeva. We had a case in our Mishnah of the two fathers with their two wives, and one bore a male and the other bore a female. Ha'avos pturin. Tana Rav Huna. Rav Huna presents a case that we don't have in the Mishnah. A case referring to two wives of two men that neither wife had children before, and they bore, these two first bearing wives bore Shnei Zechorim Unekeva. And Rav Huna's source says Ein Kan L'Kohen Klum, that the Kohen has no claim. Even though in this case, there is a definite firstborn, because we're talking about two women, neither of which ever had children before. Two males and a female are born from between these two women. Rav Huna says, the Kohen has no claim. Now, why is it that the Kohen has no claim? Because when the Kohen approaches one father, he says, listen, my wife is the one that bore the Nekeva. And when he approaches the other father, he will say, my wife produced the Nekeva. Therefore, the Kohen has no claim. The Gemara asks, V'tana didon. Now, our Mishnah, why did it not include this case of the two wives producing two wives of two men, producing from between them two males and a female? In other words, our Mishnah had a lot of cases, but this particular case of Shnei Zechorim Unekeva was not featured under the heading of Shnei Anoshim, the two wives of two men. So why does our Mishnah not include this? The Gemara answers, Kevon Debishnei Anoshim Hu de Mishkachaslo Beish Echod Ushtei Noshim Lo Mishkachaslo. The psak of Ein Kan LeKohen Klum, that a Kohen gets nothing, that psak, that ruling, can be stated only in the case of two men, two husbands. But it can't be taught in the case of one husband with two wives, one man with two wives. Because in such a case, if there was one man with two wives and they produced Shnei Zechorim Unekeva, the Kohen would have a claim. So since this example of Shnei Zechorim Unekeva cannot be taught under both headings, with Shnei Anoshim and with Ish Echad, and have this result of Ein Kan LeKohen Klum, Lo Masni Lei, our Mishnah does not teach it. In other words, our Mishnah wants to teach cases that you can find both by the case of Ish Echad and the case of Shnei Anoshim and have the same results. And since this particular result of Ein Kan L'Koin Klum following a birth of Shnei Zechorim and Nekeva Achas comes out only in the case of Shnei Anoshim, therefore our Mishnah does not teach it. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.